Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now one of the most thoughtful people on planet Earth, author Roger Rosenblatt, longtime contributor to Time and the PBS NewsHour. You may know his best-selling books, Kayak Morning, Making Toast, and others. His new book, A Meditation on New York, Childhood, Memory, and Place. It's called The Boy Detective, A New York Childhood. Roger Rosenblatt, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian.
This new book is a memoir, but it's very much set in a particular neighborhood, which you grew up in, and I'll let you say what it is, and which you then revisit on an evening walk. So describe walking around your neighborhood then versus now and where it is.
My neighborhood was Gramercy Park. That's where I was born. And the wider neighborhood, when I played the boy detective, extended to Madison Square and the Village and St. Mark's Place and Murray Hill. But I was born in Gramercy Park, which was a great place for a kid who wanted to be a writer, because that was the place where you'd see the ghosts of Melville and Stephen Crane and Edith Wharton and Henry James, and get a sense of a literary atmosphere that was both encouraging and stifling. It was the stifling part that gave birth to The Boy Detective.
And we'll talk about what that title means in a minute. But listeners, I think you already get the idea. And since this book is so much about memory and how it's triggered by place, I wonder if we can get some calls on that idea. Let's try this. Anyone who grew up in New York can call in and tell us about what it's like to walk around in your old neighborhood as a grown-up, or really you could have grown up anywhere and tell us that story about whatever place. So what kinds of connections do you feel to your childhood through the place in which it took place, and why? Is it the people, the stores, the physical features? 212-433-WNYC. And how do you feel when you walk around there? 212-433-9692 for Roger Rosenblatt, 212-433-9692. He has written The Boy Detective, A New York Childhood. And I'd say that you seem more drawn to physical space in this book, buildings, parks, streets, than, say, characters or people in the neighborhood. Is that because those things are just more permanent in some way?
That's a very good perception. Yes, I think it is because they're more permanent. When I look at the Empire State Building, I see it as the protector of King Kong. And so King Kong, I imagine this, and as you know in the book, I just go from various forms of dreams or facts or speculations. And in the kind of dreaming into the Empire State Building, I see it as King Kong embracing the building and then the building embracing King Kong, saying, "We are both the gorilla in the room. We are the biggest thing around. If you must fall, fall from me."
And when you walk around your neighborhood, you also make references to things long before your own childhood, stories of buildings from the 1860s, a story of how it was the Flatiron Building at 23rd Street that originated the phrase 23 Skidoo. Now people say 23 and me. That's a whole other thing. But 23 Skidoo derives from the Flatiron Building. Is this deep history of New York something you just picked up along the way or something you had to go actively research?
More the latter. Once I started to think about the book, I wanted to know where the places were before I was walking there. And it wasn't just the buildings. I mean, I run into people, but the people are parts of my observation during the book. It's also the ghosts of people whom I no longer see. When I was growing up, there was a phrase called genteel poverty, and this consisted of people who were poor but lived side by side with people who were upper middle class. Nobody thought of any difference, and they lived respectably. Now I don't see any poor at all that way. The poor are very poor and destitute. And as for the rich, as the song goes, the rich gets richer. But the city misses something in the mix that I had as a kid of various neighborhoods and various incomes.
You're inviting me to ask you what you think of the election on almost the exact theme that you just articulated.
Well, I don't know that any election is really going to change the basic composition of New York. I sympathize with the with the attitudes of the incumbent, and maybe they lead to good things. But I didn't think Bloomberg was a bad mayor at all, and he had antithetical views. The city is bigger than anybody who runs it. And the interesting thing is that we often get really large characters who run the city. I remember Ed Koch very well, you know, sort of blustering his way through the city. The city loved it or hated him, but it's bigger than anybody who occupies it.
Phil, in Brooklyn Heights, you're on WNYC with Roger Rosenblatt. Hi, Phil.
Hi. I'm back in the Heights after 30 years in Red Hook. And I wanted to declaim a very short poem.
Okay.
And that is,
if it's very short,
the thing I most miss
on
about
returning,
New York
on,
when I was young, is being young in New York.
So, again, you grew up in Red Hook, and then you were away for 30 years?
No, au contraire. I grew up in the Heights.
Oh, in Brooklyn Heights?
And I went to Red Hook, and then I came back.
Okay.
So you could certainly say I never went far, although, you know, it was a big change.
It's not that far as the crow flies. Maybe it is in other ways. So if this poem is really short, we'll listen to it. Go.
The thing I most miss about New York when I was young is being young in New York.
That was short. Thank you very much.
It was a wonderful place for a kid, I swear. You know, when I was a kid growing up, it wasn't a cautionary life for a child. I traveled the subways when I was 7 and 8 quite freely, walked around the city. I'm not even sure that it wasn't a dangerous place, but it was certainly not regarded as a dangerous place. And the freedom of it for a kid with a bit of an imagination, and that applied to most of the kids I knew, was a real gift.
But, you know, even the tiny poem that Phil just recited raises a profound question, I think, about the nature of nostalgia. Is it that we're nostalgic for something that really was good or better about another time in a given place, or are we just nostalgic for being younger?
Not only that, I think we have to question whether memory is accurate at all. So if we start to be nostalgic, then we assume that what we're remembering is accurate. I have memories. I discussed some in the book. I had memories that if you gave me a lie detector test, I would swear that something was to the left or something had happened in the winter or something was higher or lower than something else. It all turned out to be wrong. The memory does imagine on its own and adjusts the things in our past to some satisfaction in the present. But it is a mystery.
And yet we read an interview with you where you said that the reason you focus inward in your books is because, quote, it's the only place I have information that I can rely on.
Yes. And the fact is, when I remember saying it, too, and then thinking, I can't really rely on this. I rely on it in the sense that it is the repeated information of my life, the way you and I tell anecdotes about our lives, and they become more polished as we tell them, etc. But did they really happen that way? Rarely.
Donna in – now, let's see. This says Portugal. Donna, are you in the nation of Portugal?
I am. I'm in Porto, Portugal. I grew up in Bay Ridge on 50th Street and Fifth Avenue.
Great.
You're not in Little Portugal, somewhere in Queens.
No. I'm actually across the ocean. I was just back to the States last month for 3 weeks to visit family.
But this triggered something in you. What is it?
Well, the show did, because I can relate to what he's saying about nostalgia and memories. And, you know, I remember coming home from PS94 as a child, maybe 7 years old, and being, I guess, what we would call a latchkey kid now. My dad worked shift work, and my mom would be at work in Manhattan. I'd come home for lunch, and sometimes I would be given money, I think it was a quarter, to go to the Woolworth store, and I would get chow mein on a bun. I remember the taste. I can conjure it up in my mind. And going back and trying to recapture that is impossible. It never lives up to the memory. Never. And the safety of the time as well.
You know, but I do think sometimes we exaggerate in comparison how good it was then and as compared to now. I grew up, and you did too, in an illiberal world. In which blacks were not going to school with whites, in which a variety of people were denied their variety by a ruling class, And everything like that has changed, everything in the same amount of time. So that while the chow mein on the bun may have disappeared, so did a lot of things that we didn't like that went along with it.
Donna, thank you so much for calling up.
You're welcome.
And I'm so honored that you're listening to us so far away.
I think that's remarkable.
Roger Rosenblatt's new book is called The Boy Detective, A New York Childhood. And I want to segue right out of her thought about safety back to the book, because you kind of start this work of yours as a boy detective because your neighborhood is too safe, right?
Sure. It was much too tame. It was a beautiful neighborhood in Gramercy Park, still is. But for a kid, and I didn't think I was a special kid at all, but for a kid, it was too contained, and I wanted out. I wanted out physically so I could walk outside the neighborhood, but I wanted out in my imagination. So I pretended I was a detective. Since kids didn't wear suit jackets, I had to take my cap gun and a jury-rigged shoulder holster under my shirt. Looked like a kid who had stolen a mango from a fruit stand. And then I would follow people, but I'd have to follow them at very close distances. Otherwise, they wouldn't know they were being followed. If they didn't know they were being followed, nobody would. And every once in a while, they would turn quite annoyed at being followed by a kid with a mango in his shirt.
And on that note, we turn to Amit in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hello.
How are you? Thanks for taking my call. I've been listening to your show for many years, and much like your other caller who called from Portugal, when I was living in other parts of the world, I continued to listen.
Thank you so much.
We carry you everywhere we go. I was born and raised in Pelham Gardens in the Bronx, which is a sort of middle-class outer borough neighborhood, lots of single-family homes, lots of mother-daughter homes, little bucolic, some nice trees and park area. And, you know, when I was growing up, it was pretty safe, and that was the 80s and then the early 90s, and people always thought, oh, well, the Bronx is so dangerous, but we had a nice little neighborhood. Pretty mono-ethnic at the time. It was mostly Italian and Jewish, and now it's changed. The demographics have changed. But what really strikes me about the neighborhood is that physically, it's still so very similar to the way it used to be. It's largely untouched by the development craze that's taken over New York City in the last couple of, 10 years or so. And it's so striking to me that a lot of these neighborhoods are actually, and I'm back in Pelham Gardens now, a lot of them really are anchored by the families that have been there for decades. And to me, that is really where the strength of New York lies, is people who decided to kind of be in New York City, stay here, not leave through the bad old days, my parents included, and really create lives and homes for themselves and for their families. And we're very lucky and fortunate to have neighborhoods such as that.
Beautifully said, Amit. Thank you very much.
It's an interesting thing, because what he's really saying is that nobody in New York is really from New York, because it's too vast to be from. So you're from a neighborhood in the Bronx or a neighborhood in Brooklyn or Gramercy Park.
Let's do two more of these before we run out of time. Guy in Sunnyside, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call. Just like that last caller said, it's always amazing how every time I go to my old neighborhood in Harlem, I think back of the bad old days, growing up there. But then, when I see like the Harlem Tavern or Red Rooster and all these new places that are just developing within a neighborhood, it's kind of great. I mean, I grew up in Harlem in the 80s. Left, moved to Florida, went to college in Louisiana, came back to New York in 2005, and my dad's been living here since the 50s.
So give me one. What's a memory connected with a sense of place or a feeling or as tangible as you can make it when you go back to the Harlem that you left?
The feeling of just... it's really hard to describe. I mean, feeling of happiness and sadness at the same time. I remember walking down Adam Clayton Powell and just seeing, lots of people hanging down the street and, kind of used to seeing needles on the floor, which back then that was that's what you saw. And then kind of now, it's like, not to say that I condone the drugs that was happening back then, but I kind of really miss it. It's a weird, it's a weird feeling.
Gee, I hear you. I'm going to leave it there, and I thank you. And you kind of have that, too, in your book. But it, again, raises the question of the value of nostalgia for me, because if you're remembering Gramercy Park as a place that was too safe in your childhood, you know, is memory too gauzy? You know, do we, if we remember the bad old days as good just because they're old, what's the use of that?
Well, for a writer, that's not an irrelevant question. The use of it is we can make books of it. The other part of it is that it's the only thing we have, Brian. This book, as you know, pays no attention to time. I don't really believe in time. Time was invented so things wouldn't happen all at once. But things do happen all at once. While you're interviewing me, you're thinking of the next person who's going to be on the show, and perhaps thinking of the last person who was on the show.
Uh-oh, you're in my head.
So you are, but it's natural. We all think in three tenses simultaneously. And the idea that that time has any meaning is a wish more than anything else. And once that's true, then we can almost do anything with our thoughts or anything with our memories.
So we'll come full circle in a way and let you talk to somebody else who grew up in Gramercy Park.
Good deal.
Susan, now in Murray Hill. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Mr. Rosenblatt, I walk your Gramercy Park neighborhood every single day. I'm a psychotherapist. Actually, I'm in Murray Hill. But I go to Gramercy Park and look at the leaves in the park. It's the most beautiful neighborhood in the city, and it is probably the last vestige of real humane city life. I grew up in the Bronx, 10 blocks north of Yankee Stadium, in the late 50s and 60s, when the Bronx was a homogeneous neighborhood. And apropos of all the things you guys have been speaking about, every girl I knew in the Bronx that I grew up with came from some kind of dysfunctional family, and most of them, like myself, turned out to be social workers or psychotherapists or involved in the mental health field in some way, where our bread and butter is getting others to speak about their nostalgia, their memories, yeah, their memories that they can't shake.
Right, but I wonder if the Bronx was ever as homogeneous as you say. My parents grew up in the Bronx in the 1930s, and talk about a different kind of diversity than is there today.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. Well, homogeneous in that people were kind of, in the 50s and 60s, lower middle class, mailmen, teachers, laborers of some sort, all squished in.
You want to engage? And so I misspoke when I said you grew up in Gramercy. You're there now, and or walk through
there
now, and grew up in the Bronx. But do you want to engage about that neighborhood at all, Roger?
When I was a kid, I always wanted to live in Murray Hill, where you, our caller, lives now. The reason, I have no idea the reason was, but it wasn't Gramercy Park. And besides, one of the great fictional detectives lived in Murray Hill, Philo Vance. But the memories that we seek, Brian, are often the memories with edge on them. I remember I loved going down to 10th Street in the Village, where the woman's prison was. And the women who were incarcerated in the prison had a roof, had an enclosure in the roof. And they'd yell down at the kids and they'd say, "Hey, kids, you want to come up? You want to get some?" We had no idea what getting some meant. And we were incapable, of course, of acting on the invitation. But the point was, there was a free wild life. And the imposition or intrusion or maybe the welcoming of a wild life in New York, that never changes.
Recalls Marshall Berman's book about the old Times Square.
Just right.
And there we leave it with Roger Rosenblatt, whose new book, give us the exact title.
It's called The Boy Detective, A New York Childhood.
Thank you so much.
My thanks to you.
And now for the last few minutes of the show, we're going to flip the script and take calls only from people who have moved to New York or become adults in New York in the last 12 years. In other words, in the Bloomberg era. So as we transition politically in New York City, if Bloomberg is the only mayor you've ever known as a grown-up, call in right now, 212-433-WNYC, and talk about the essence of that. It can be a hard political essence. It can be a more cultural or place-oriented essence. But if you have come of age in New York in the last 12 years or moved to New York from India or Indiana in the last 12 years, call up and describe that moment and or this city and what this moment of transition feels like to you as it begins. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, and we'll take those calls after this.